श्रीमद् भागवतम फोर पिलर्स ऑफ मोरालिटी एंड रिलीजन आर गिवन, धर्म अर्थ काम एंड मोक्ष. एंड वी फाइंड धर्म मीन्स रिलीजियोसिटी, अर्थ मीन्स द एक्विजिशन ऑफ वेल्थ, काम मीन्स सेंस वेरिफिकेशन एंड मोक्ष मीन्स लिबरेशन. द डिसाइपल हु वांट्स टू आस्क फॉर एनी ऑफ दीज फॉर ऑल ऑफ दिस ही इज नॉट द प्रॉपर डिसाइपल. दिस पॉइंट वी मस्ट नोट इन श्रीमद् भागवतम. इफ अ डिसाइपल गोज अप टू अ स्पिरिचुअल मास्टर एंड आस्क प्लीज गेट मी अ गुड जॉब, then Prabhupada writes, you might as well go to a job consultancy. They are also your gurus then, because they will get you a nice job. If you go to Krishna or you go to Guru and say, now please help me become a religious and pious person, then you can go to the temple for that. You don't need Guru. Because we can go to temple and we can ask for the balance three moralities when we become religious. It is not difficult. If you go to Guru and say, I want some nice prasadam, I need to have a nice wife, sometimes, you know, unfortunately, we turn to spiritual master and we ask for so many things. But if the reason for the asking of these things is that these are the end in itself, if we go to spiritual master and ask, please give me a nice wife, then the spiritual master can tell us that then I might as well become the marriage guru. There is no need then for a spiritual master. And if we go to spiritual master and say that I want liberation from this material existence, then the spiritual master can easily tell you, then you just sit down and become a yogi. Because somehow or another, if you protect yourself in disease, you may somehow or another come to the cycle of the liberation from material platform. Why this is important is, these are not the questions that we should ask the spiritual master. The real question to ask the spiritual master is, what is the purpose of my existence? Why am I here? And what should I be doing with my life? The questions that should be asked are actually found in text 38. These are the questions that a true disciple must ask the spiritual master. Please let me know what a man should hear. Please let me know what a man should chant. Please let me know what he should remember and worship. And also please let me know what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. If these questions are asked to the spiritual master, then all other difficulties in the material life will automatically fall into place. They will fall into place. But if those questions pertaining to dharma, artha, kama and moksha are asked first, or those are the real questions troubling our hearts, and we ask the correct questions but expect the wrong answers, then we are also in difficulty. The mentality of the living entity is cheating propensity. So very often, because we are so accustomed to dealing with people in a cheating manner, even when Guru comes also, we also want to cheat him. We want something for ourselves, which we can feel it now, but we try and couch it in favorable language. That also Prabhupada condemned, because that is not the real purpose of Guru. So a devotee should be very practical and on the ground. If he were to ask questions like why I should chant, how I should chant, what I should hear, what I should remember, then definitely the spiritual master, as exalted as Shukadeva Goswami, will send a bona fide representative spiritual master to answer and satisfy that heart of the sincere disciple. Definitely, definitely. But as Prabhupada always stated in his purport, if you want to be cheated, then Krishna will arrange for the best of all cheat gurus to come and cheat you also. It is not very difficult. See, the demons have their guru as Sukracharya. And we know that the demons were very, very compliant to Sukracharya. That is why they became so powerful that even the demigods were powerless against them. So they were very obedient to Sukracharya, and the result of such obedience was success in their material field. But it was not success in the true spiritual field. The demons were not interested in finding out what I should hear, what I should chant, and what I should remember and worship. They were just interested in dharma, maybe not dharma, even though sometimes they were pious, but definitely if they were pious, it was because of artha, kama and moksha. But their moksha was very simple. As long as they were enjoying, they were liberated. That was moksha for them. So, we find that the purpose of the existence and the success and the spiritual devotional service eluded them. They did not go far anywhere. So the result was, even though they fought countless battles and won so many times, they were always in state of anxiety. They were never, never at peace. Because they did not approach the spiritual master correctly. You look at the demigods. The demigods had as their spiritual master Brihaspati. But right at the beginning part, I think 7th chapter or 6th chapter, you find the demigods also started on the wrong foot. The whole problem with Vrishasur, the whole problem why the demigods were to that extent terrorized by Vrishasur, was only because of one act, and one act only. Indra offended Brihaspati. That's all. Indra was sitting down in the ninth assembly. He was intoxicated with his material opulence and he thought that he was the lord of all the devas and therefore how powerful he must be. So he was looking at all the apsaras dancing and he was looking at the opulence around him. And when Brihaspati, his spiritual master, walked into the palace, Indra did not even bother to stand up to receive him. The act of standing up itself is nothing very fantastic. But when one does not stand up for one's spiritual master, then it shows that the anxiety of asking questions is definitely absent. If you cannot stand up to offer dandavat to your spiritual master, how much mood will you have to ask him the questions pertaining to life and devotional service? So, Brihaspati, which did not stand up and immediately deliver a curse, if Bhruvasamuni was there, definitely curse would have been there. But Brihaspati was not like that. He very silently saw what had happened. He realized that this was a problem. He did not observe the correct etiquette that a disciple should observe. Brihaspati realized the symptom. This act of not standing up was a symptom of a greater disease in the heart. That Indra was not bothered about the true purpose of his existence. He was bothered about material existence and maintaining his position as king of this heavenly planet. So when Brihaspati realized that, he walked away because, not because he was offended, but because he found there was no purpose to his existence anymore there. What is the role of a spiritual master to a disciple who is not interested in asking such questions? He has no role. So Brihaspati walked away. He walked away. And even though Indra stood up and he tried to be repentant in the assembly of all the devas, their repentance, we realized, was not enough, because the repentance was not enough to ask him, to push him to the point of asking the real purpose of question true to his existence. He did not approach Brihaspati after that to ask him the true purpose of his existence. No, he went around because he was afraid, now all my opulence will be lost, now I will be in difficulty, now I fear the worst will happen, the asuras will become very strong. So Indra is a great exalted personality. But he is teaching us a very important point here, that as spiritual disciples of a spiritual master, our duty should always be never to deviate from the process of asking the right questions, questions vital to the purpose of our existence. This is an important point. You know, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are four chatushlokas. They are found in the second chapter, 9th verse. It starts from 33, 34, 35 and 36. In the 36th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, very nicely Krishna says, Etavat eva jidnyasam. This is an important verse. Sabda jidnyasunat manaha. Then he goes on to remind us, Anvaya yati rekhavyam. Rekhavyam means indirectly or directly. Yatya sarvatra sarvada. The translation to this verse is very important to this verse today. Krishna says there, that a person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly will search for up to this. In all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. Why this verse is important is because in the purport to this very important verse, Prabhupada writes there that actually to unfold the mystery of Bhakti Yoga, to unfold what the devotional process is, one must ask and one must begin to inquire and ask questions. When we come for discussions on Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, we are very happy when devotees ask questions. And we become more happy when the questions are pertaining to the real issues of our spiritual life. And very often you find, because these questions are asked, the whole congregation benefits. Because everyone is addressing one's mind to the process of devotional service. So Prabhupada writes in the purport there that one who is developing consciousness, he will ask the right questions. And what are the right questions? Here Prabhupada goes on by stating exactly what he has stated in the 38th verse, but he gives little bit more direction so as devotees we also can come to understand that point. Prabhupada says, He will make inquiry into the mystery of the self. He will make inquiry into this cosmic creation. Who we are, why are we here, why is this world created? These are the questions that we should ask our spiritual master. Then he will ask the questions relating to the problems of life. Because if we can accept that there are problems in life, and we ask that the spiritual master shows us the real way to solve the problems of life, then we are coming to the point of surrendering to the spiritual master. And Prabhupada writes there that the problems of life are not just confined to what we call the spiritual problems, but they cover the sphere of social, political, economic, cultural, religious, moral, even their different branches. See how nicely Prabhupada has put this. Sometimes we may think that, can I approach my spiritual master and ask him the problems of this material world and why they are there? Some people find that they will progress in spiritual life if they find answers to these problems. Prabhupada writes here and confirms that any problem, even though it may be a cultural problem or a material problem or a marital problem, you may have problems with your marriage also, but if you approach a spiritual master for marriage counseling, then of course you are not going to get the full benefit of spiritual life. But if from the problems of your marriage you come to realize that why these problems are there, and then you approach the spiritual master, then even that problem which appears material can actually yield the spiritual results. This is an important distinction to make. We do not discourage devotees from expressing their hearts to their spiritual master. It is not that after this discussion we should all go back and say, now if I want to get married to a devotee, I should not ask blessings from my spiritual master, because marriage has nothing to do with devotional service. No. If your marriage in the devotional service requires that you are praying to Krishna that you will be married to a devotee, and you seek the guidance of the spiritual master on how to conduct yourself in this sphere of your life, and if he gives you nice instructions and you follow it, then you are correctly asking the right questions. And the true spiritual master will give you the right guidance. So this is an important point Prabhupada says. Vaishnavas are very broad-minded. We do not want the people to think that asking questions about Krishna and Krishna alone is the way to Krishna consciousness. Not everyone is at that stage, but everyone has problems in life. But if we approach Krishna with the mood that really my spiritual master can help me, and only he can deliver me from the difficulties and sufferings in life, and if we approach him with the idea that ultimately we want to become good disciples and good devotees, then the purpose of our existence and the purpose of our inquiry will become very nicely dovetailed to the lotus feet of the spiritual master. That is why this verse of Chatushloka is very important. That apart from Krishna and his devotees, we don't have to go anywhere else. All of us only need to search up to this level. And what is this level? The level of the devotional service to the Supreme Spiritual Master Sri Krishna and his bona fide representative. That is all we need. So if we understand that, then we will not complicate our lives. We won't look around and ask ourselves, I need all these things to be in place before I can start the process of devotional service. We won't say that I will take shelter of spiritual master only if he can bring me money, only if he can bring me a nice wife, only if he can assure I have a good bank balance. No. We will approach the spiritual master to ask him what should be the right way to live our lives. And then we will make that instruction central to our devotional service. And then, as Prabhupada writes here, all spheres of your life, be they cultural, be they material, be they economic, they will all fall in place. Because automatic byproduct of the nice devotional service is that all hindrances to the devotional service will also be removed by the mercy of Guru. The hindrances to devotional service were never removed by Sukracharya, because the demons did not ask the right questions, and Sukracharya, by his very name, his very name means seminal. Sukra means by semen. Sukracharya means one who has become Guru by familial relation. It is like family Guru. Sometimes familiarity breeds contempt, and we think that if I have family Guru, I will advance in devotional service. But family Guru is just Guru for the family. He is not Guru for the man who is about to die. And we forget that Parikshit Maharaj's situation and our situation is not very different. The only difference is he's got advanced notice. We have no notice. So our situation is more dangerous. If Parikshit Maharaj can sit down and beg for the right question, how much important it must be that from today we must make a pledge in our hearts that we also beg the spiritual master for the right question and for the right motive. This is very important. So the devas approached Brihaspati for the wrong motive, and therefore because of that, because of his offense to Brihaspati, Indra just lost his luster. The demigods lost their strength, and finally they were decimated by the demons and Vrishasura. Even when the devas went to Krishna to pray as their supreme spiritual master, so that to protect him and the devas from Vrishasura, they did not pray to become devotees, unfortunately. They just prayed that they will regain their kingdom. That Prabhupada right there is the ultimate sign of misfortune in this material world. That we approach the Guru, we have the pure spiritual master with us, but instead of asking how I should hear Bhagavatam, how I should chant, how I should remember Krishna, and how I should study this wonderful process, we are talking about everything else and anything else just to make some nice relationship. Oh Maharaj, you know, this is like that, that is like that, how are you doing, what are you doing? These questions, Guru is not there to answer. These questions, you might as well become a PR and you might as well stand behind a hotel and ask the customers to come for these questions. Because you're not going to get the right answers if we behave this way to you. And because of that, Vrishasura was supposed to be a demon. He understood the purpose of asking the right questions. And therefore, his glory is much greater today than the demigod. Ya eka isho nijamayaya naha sasarjayena anujama visvam nayam nayasyati puraha samihitam pashema lingam pridaisha maninaha. In 6th canto, 9th chapter, 25th verse, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Indra and the demigods, they may have lost the plot for a while, but their prayers are very nice. And we should learn from them, from their prayers. They say nicely, Ya Eka Isho. They say that Krishna, we know that you are the only one and the only supreme. And we know that though we appear to be creators, maintainers and destroyers of the universe, frankly, without your mercy, we will not be able to create, destroy or maintain anything. But unfortunately, we are so blind and puffed up with our material opulence that we do not approach you because of our ego in the correct manner. And because we do not approach you in the correct manner, Pashyevalingam Pritakishamarinaha, we are unable to see you face to face because we think that we are supreme and independent God. So Parikshit Maharaj never thought himself as independent. A true disciple never thinks he is independent. He always feels helpless. He always feels that without the instructions of my spiritual master, I cannot ask the right questions, I cannot progress in devotional service. So the demigod correctly teach us that because the moment a living entity thinks, I know what to do in the process of devotional service, that moment he thinks that way, his devotional service is finished. And why? Because he becomes so puffed up. Pashyeva lingam pitakisha marinaha. Even though Krishna is before us, we cannot relish him face to face. Even if the pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada is in front of us, we cannot relish who he really is and how we should approach him face to face. We miss out. We just miss it. So this point is very important. So the first point we should understand is that the practical way of approaching Guru is very important. Parikshit Maharaj's first question to Shukadev Goswami was not, how many flutes does Krishna have? He did not ask, what is Krishna doing at this point in Vrindavan? He did not ask, tell me about the loving relationship between the gopis and Krishna. He did not ask these questions. What did he ask? He asked, please tell me what a man should hear, what a man should chant, what he should remember, and what should he do to prepare himself for the point when he is going to die. These are the questions we have to ask. We must know our position. You know, even in material life, people always say, please know who you are before you die. People sometimes tell us, you know, do you know who you are talking to and do you know who you are? You should remember who you are. So we should correctly remember who we are, where we stand in the devotional ladder. We should know that we are the lowest of the lowest. of what use and of what relish can we relish of these great high transgressive pastimes of life, of the pastimes of the Lord, when we don't even know how to start the practical points of the devotional service. This is the important thing. Devotional service is not in the air, Prabhus and Matajis. It must be on the ground. For every verse that we study in Bhagavatam, we should be able to extract from that verse what we must do immediately with that verse. We must understand from that verse what we must do now. What practically must be done in devotional service. This is very important. You know, in second chapter, I think it is text 54 of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is inquired by Arjuna, the most important inquiry of the whole Bhagavad Gita. What is the famous verse? Arjuna uvacha sita pragnasya bhavasha. Do we know this verse? This 54 to 72 is considered by Acharyas to be the most important point of chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita. Sita pragnasya bhavasha samadhi sita keshavaha sita dikhim prabhasheta kim asita vradeta kim. It is this query, upon which this query, that the whole of the summary of Bhagavad Gita is started by Arjuna. And the translation is very nice. Krishna, Arjuna said, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? This is it. What a man should hear, chant and remember is paraphrased by Arjuna in this question. What does he do? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And how does he talk? These are the questions that Bhagavad Gita is asking. So frankly speaking, Bhagavatam becomes very, very important to the devotional service when we know how to ask the correct questions. Prabhupada spent the greater part of his lectures only hammering one point home. Who are we? We are not this body. Who are we? We are spirit soul. Did Prabhupada speak at any point of time about the relationship between Krishna and the gopis? He did not. Even in Krishna book, when Prabhupada gave the essence of Krishna Leela, his approach was always that at any point of time that Prabhupada spoke about one pastime in Krishna book, you find there will be three paragraphs after the one paragraph of pastime to tell us as devotees how we should be behaving. What this Leela of Krishna is telling us about our devotional service. You find whole Krishna book is in that way. For every one paragraph of nice activity of Krishna, there are three paragraphs on how to behave like devotees. For every one paragraph on the beautiful activity of Krishna, there are 10 paragraphs on how to pray to Krishna. Isn't that what devotional service should be? So before we think about how to relish the wonderful pastimes of the Lord, we have to understand how to walk, how to crawl, how to behave ourselves as devotees. This is what this great inquiry of Parikshit Maharaj is about. We are going to die, Prabhus and Matajis. After we leave this temple, frankly, we don't know by the end of the day which one of us is going to knock off. We don't know by the end of the week who is going to go. We don't know. We will get a call suddenly, and suddenly it will be a shocking point. A devotee has left us. We really don't know. We don't know. The younger Prabhus look at the older Prabhus. Maybe we think subtly, you know, at least I think I still have more time. Whatever happens, you know, by the law of averages and by the law of probabilities and possibilities, I will last a bit longer. So let me not be so bothered too much about the inquiries. They need to be on their toes. The older devotees will think, all you younger people think I may go. But God only knows you may go before me. So like that, everyone is thinking when we are going to go. But the question is, before when we go, we must ask how we are going to go. And that question is what Parikshit Maharaj is asking. He knows he is going to go. But the question now is, what are you going to do about it? Will we change the quality of our lifestyle starting today? Will we increase the fabric of our devotional service starting today? Will we ask the right questions when we next call or write or see our spiritual masters? Or will we ask the right questions to the devotees who are like our spiritual masters? Or will we waste our time asking questions of life which have no value? This is the thing that Parikshit Maharaj is teaching us. So the first question is, for a successful disciple to ask the right question, he must ask with the right motive. And that motive is that only how to improve bhakti and what will please the Vaishnava is the real question that a devotee must have in his heart. If he has that question in his heart, then for a dying man, he will ask very, very submissively this question. And he will ask it and he will hear. Our problem sometimes spoke in conversations is, we ask all the right questions. But after the spiritual master has given us the right answers, we don't want to hear the answers. You know, sometimes I ask a question, but I want a particular answer to the question. That also is a problem. Ekalavya is a good example. Ekalavya is a very good example. You know, in Mahabharata, Ekalavya was a Nishadha prince. And we also know that he wanted very much to take up the tutelage and to take shelter of Dronacharya. So while Arjuna and all the others were being taught, when Dronacharya came spread as a great teacher of Dharur Veda, the science of weaponry, this Nishadha prince, he came and he took darshan of Dronacharya. When he fell at the feet of Dronacharya, he asked this question, please accept me as a disciple. Dronacharya looked at him and asked him, where are you from? And what is your parentage? And what is your background? When he said that he was a Nishadha, Nishadha means basically they are tribal people. And being tribal people, their ways and their habits and all tend to be a bit crude. Their approach to life is also very different. So seeing all these things and observing him, Dronacharya as Guru said, that my first order to you is that you should not take shelter of me as spiritual master. I decline to accept you as my disciple. Now please obey what I have said and please go away. Now the Nishadha prince, he became very upset. But he decided, no, I really want to take shelter of Dronacharya. So he went into the forest where he stayed, and what did he do? He built a clay image of Dronacharya. And he started every day doing arati, and he started doing worship, and he started doing Guru Puja. And at the end of all that, after doing all that, he would sit down or he would stand up and he would practice and practice and practice until he became so good that one day when the Pandavas were in the forest, they suddenly let their hunting dog loose. One of the hunting dogs somehow or another strayed into the area where Ekalavya was. And as the dog opened its mouth to bark, before the dog could close its mouth, you know, you've seen dogs bark. They bark very fast. If you observe in slow motion, the dog will open and close its mouth at least 10 times in the period of barking. In that one time before it can close its mouth, this Nishadha prince Ekalavya had shot almost 7 to 10 arrows into his mouth in quick succession. The dog couldn't even close its mouth, it ran whimpering away to the Pandavas. Pandavas looked at this, Arjuna immediately asked, who is this great archer? Who can shoot like that in rapid succession? They looked around and finally they came across Ekalavya practicing. Arjuna went up to Ekalavya and asked him this question, who is your spiritual master? Who has taught you this wonderful art of archery? And Nishadha prince stood up very proudly and said, Dronacharya is my spiritual master. So Arjuna felt a little bit, you know. He was feeling a bit. So he thought, he went back to Dronacharya with all the Pandavas and said, this Nishadha prince did this amazing feat. Then Arjuna asked him, you told me that you will make me the greatest of all archers. How is it that you have taken this person as your disciple? Is there something there that I have not done which you have become displeased with? Arjuna was not jealous. We'll come to find out that he was not at all jealous. So Dronacharya was a bit perturbed. So he said, all of you come, let's go and see this great archer. So they went into the forest, and the moment Ekalavya saw Dronacharya, he fell at the feet of his guru and said, Gurudev, see now, because of your teaching, I have come to this position today. So Dronacharya was scratching his head and thinking, I don't recall teaching you all these things. But never mind. He said, who taught you all this? He said, you. Look at your clay image. Every day I'm looking at you and speaking your blessings that I have been practicing and practicing. So Dronacharya then thought about it and said, alright, since you say that I am your guru, definitely. And since you say that you have learned all this from me, definitely. Then there's one thing that you must do which is very important between guru and disciple. What is it, spiritual master? Tell me, where is my dakshina? For every guru who comes, we must give dakshina. Dakshina can be anything. But specifically Dronacharya wanted one dakshina. And what was it? He said, give me your thumb. Give me your thumb. So immediately, without hesitation, Ekalavya just took his sword, sliced off his thumb, and gave his thumb to his spiritual master. And you all know that without your thumb, you try shooting an arrow, you don't even have to be Arjuna, but you know you can't shoot. So in that way, the Nishadha prince Ekalavya could not become the greatest archer in the world, and Arjuna maintained his standing. Then, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj has written in his commentary that though very often it is common knowledge, unfortunately wrong knowledge, everyone thinks Ekalavya was a great disciple. This is how a disciple should be. That even despite the fact that he is away from his spiritual master, but despite the distance being there, he was so faithful to the teachings of the spiritual master. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur cautions us this point, that Ekalavya was not a good example of Guru Bhakti. Why was he not a good example of Guru Bhakti? For the simple reason that Ekalavya did not follow the first order of his spiritual master. And what was that first order? That I will not accept you and teach you the art of shooting arrows. That was the first order. And that was the first order at the start. If we really, really, if Ekalavya really had Guru Bhakti, he would have followed that first order and said, yes, since I accept you as my spiritual master, whatever you say becomes my life and my soul. So if the spiritual master told him at that point of time, now you stop doing this, he ought to have followed that. Instead, he went on a frolic of his own. He decided in his mind that I will do what I want. And because the starting point, his relationship with his spiritual master was not on the right platform, whatever endeavors that he did after that bore no fruit. Whether material success or spiritual success, both were failures. Both were failures. In fact, Ekalavya wanted Guru, as Prabhupada cautions in this purport, for his own material motives. He wanted his Guru to be someone who would teach him to become the best archer. He was rivaling a Vaishnava like Arjuna. His motive for approaching Guru was because he wanted to become a better person than Arjuna. As Vaishnava, we must be very careful. We do not approach Guru to become the best devotee. We approach Guru because we are the worst devotee. If we have that mood, then any Vaishnava who is a greater devotee than us, we don't feel anything. We become very happy. See how great he is. We have to learn from him. We don't approach Guru, please help me because my God brother has approached me, he's become a great disciple. So I also want to become as great a disciple, if not greater than him. This is not a rat race. This is not living in Singapore the material way. This is spiritual life. When someone becomes better than us, we become happy. Those of you who have our Vaishnava calendar, you read the month of May at the bottom. You read that wonderful paragraph that Prabhupada has given. Prabhupada says, when a devotee sees a Vaishnava becoming very great in devotional service, he eulogizes. A eulogy is a way of praising a devotee. So when a devotee praises another devotee, he genuinely sees this is a great Vaishnava. He does not approach a spiritual master because, oh, this guru has so many great disciples. Therefore, if I approach such a guru, I will also become a great disciple. And maybe even better than the others. This is what Ekalavya wanted, and this is not what he got in the end. So please, devotion to Guru must be free of all these motives. Devotion to Guru must be for the right questions. If we have the right questions, we will become like Arjuna. Arjuna appeared helpless before Krishna, and therefore because he was helpless and because he asked the right questions, he became the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Which brings us now to the most important point. One, now we know that we have to approach Guru and ask the right questions with the right motive. That is very important. And according to that motive, Krishna will send cheetah Guru or pure Guru. That depends on how much we want to be cheated or how much we want to cheat. Having understood that, when a Guru is really giving us right answers to our questions, we must be prepared to hear and accept submissively what the Guru has said. Not hear what we want to hear. Ekalavya wanted to hear what he wanted to hear. When he didn't hear it, he proceeded without Guru. We must ask ourselves the question. Sometimes, very often, we get into this problem. We do everything. Then we go to Guru Maharaj and ask for blessing. Then it's like a post-dated sex. You know, it's post-facto. You've already done everything. But now you're in trouble somehow because you're doing something, it's not going the way you want. So what do you do? Now you approach spiritual master with great humility. Gurudev, I took some initiative based on your general instructions that I should do all this. There are no general instructions that Guru gives you. Every Guru will give you specific instructions. That's all. I remember when I was speaking to His Grace Sansekhar Prabhu, Sivakumar Prabhu, especially Sansekhar Prabhu, Sansekhar Prabhu told me how His Guru Maharaj specifically told him to do prison preaching. And whether day, rain, shine or whatever, Prabhu is in the prison when he is supposed to preach. He is not looking for a general instruction. He got a specific instruction and he has followed it to the T. That is the perfection of his spiritual existence. Like that, if we are really serious about devotional service, the spiritual master will always give us specific instructions. We don't have to worry. We don't have to think, oh, what happens in this, whatever, it automatically will come, provided we want to hear submissively. If we do not want to hear, then Ekalavya is there. So this Guru Bhakti is very, very important. And after asking the right questions, being submissive to the right kind of inquiries and accepting them in the heart and practicing them, we come to the final qualification of a disciple that is very, very glaring in this verse. And it comes in two phrases. One is a word, and that word is begging. Notice how Parikshit Maharaj uses the word, I am begging you to show the way of perfection. And the other word, the phrase that Prabhupada uses is, perfectly anxious. In this material world, if you use the word perfectly anxious, people think you're crazy. Because anxiety in this material world is something nobody wants. Even devotees are encouraged not to be materially anxious. If you're anxious for dharma, artha, kama, moksha, then very difficult to be anxious for bhakti. But if you're anxious, then devotees are, Prabhupada tells us here, that anxiety is a good thing to have in spiritual life. In fact, a disciple's mood must be that he's always anxious. He's anxious about what? Not anxious because he wants to become the best disciple. Not anxious because he wants to be seen as the greatest person. But anxious to ask the right questions and serve the devotees and the spiritual master. That should be our anxiety. Always we must be on our toes. Am I doing the right service? Am I doing what my spiritual master has asked me to do? This perfect anxiety will induce us to ask the right questions. It is this mood that is very important. What is the point of asking the right questions when we don't approach the spiritual master with the right mood of asking the questions? If Parikshit Maharaj asks all the right questions, okay, Srimati Goswami, I need you to tell me all these things. One, please tell me what I should read. Two, enlighten me on what I should chant. Three, please elaborate on what a living being should be doing. He didn't ask such questions in that manner. What was his mood? I am begging you. That is the question, that is the word that he is using. I am begging you to please show me the way. This is the mood of a devotee. A devotee means that he feels helpless. Prabhupada, in many of his conversations, he said that when one is begging for something, it implies that he is helpless. That is the implication of the word begging. Prabhupada writes helpless, helpless. He says it twice. He says when one begs, that means he is helpless. What does it mean when he is helpless? It means that on his own, he cannot do anything in devotional service. That is the mood of a beggar. It's a very important point. And begging, you must find the right mood of begging. Prabhupada wrote there that the right mood of begging is very important. And the example Prabhupada gave was the way Arjuna is begging at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita to become successful in discharging what Krishna wants him to do. How does he pray? He looked at the flag that was above his chariot. Who was in that flag? Hanumanji was in that flag. So Prabhupada writes in one of his lectures, that when Arjuna saw the flag of Hanumanji, what did he do? He immediately begged in his prayer. He begged Hanumanji, please, you are a great servant of the Lord. Once upon a time when the Lord was Ramchandra, you fought for him. So because now I am trying to fight for Krishna, I beg you to please help me to fight for Krishna in the right way. when we look at a flag of Hanumanji, nothing registers in our mind. Oh, Hanumanji is on the flag, very auspicious. That's it. For us, everything must be auspicious. But Hanumanji is asking, but look at Arjuna. He looks at Hanumanji and he prays from the previous Acharya. Prabhupada writes, the Acharya for Arjuna was Hanumanji because he was fighting Acharya. So he prayed to Hanumanji to fight well. So we also must pray to our Acharyas, previous Acharyas and our spiritual master, that you know how to do it best. Please let me pray, I'm begging you, please engage me in your service and please teach me how I should hear, how I should chant, how I should remember Krishna. This mood is very important. When we have this begging mood, then we don't think ourselves as being helpful to others, but we think of ourselves as being helpless. And we help, and being helpless, we ask Krishna, please help us. So any activity of Vaishnava at the beginning must start with this begging attitude. Without begging attitude, we will not progress anywhere in spiritual life. Prabhupada also wrote that if you read Krishnadas Kaviraj Maharaj in Chaitanya Charitamrita, at the end of every chapter, Prabhupada writes, you will find that Krishnadas Kaviraj Maharaj at the beginning and at the end, he is always begging for the mercy of the lotus feet and for the mercy of all the Vaishnava Acharyas before him, that he will write properly. This is the mood of an exalted Vaishnava. Then we must learn from this. Even a fraction, we should not think, no, I don't need to beg. It's my right to ask. No, we must become really begging in our mood. And begging means you become helpless, helpless, helpless. This is very important. You find Brahmaji, when Brahmaji was praying in 3rd canto, 9th chapter, Brahmaji was praying for prayers of creative energy. Brahmaji prayed for 1,000 years. He prayed very hard to Krishna. What was his prayer like? Prabhupada writes that he was only asking for Krishna's mercy to become a successful creator of the material universe. But Brahmaji is the most intelligent and perfect being in this universe. He definitely had the blessings of Krishna to create. Did he have to ask Krishna? Did he have to beg? And beg also for 1,000 years? You beg for 5 minutes and you try. Very difficult. After 1,000 years, I think you'll be wiped out. Most of us don't live that long anyway. So for the whole prayers of 3-9, you'll find Brahmaji is begging by prayer. And at the end of the 3-9, the whole chapter, Brahmaji is described by Krishna that after his prayers, he became very tired. His mental concentration was really stretched. He became dejected because he had not heard from Krishna. Nothing. After 20-30 prayers, Krishna didn't come. After 1,000 years of tapas, no news from Krishna. What became the mood of Brahmaji? Oh, now after 1,000 years, that should qualify him to become a great creator. No. He became morose. He became dejected. He became depressed. You know, in modern world we hear this word depression all the time, but we are depressed for all the wrong reasons. If we become depressed, we should become depressed at the inabilities and at the faults of our emotions. That is the right way to become depressed. Brahmaji demonstrated that to us. And because he became so depressed and so sad, he just became silent. He was tired after 1,000 years, Prabhupada writes. And then Krishna appeared. And when Krishna appeared, what did he do? He shook hands with Brahmaji. How nice, after 1,000 years the Lord shake hands with you. It is the perfection of your existence. But what Krishna says in 3.9.29 of, yes, I think it's 21, sorry, 21 or 22, 3.9.21 is very important for us to remember. He says, Ma Veda Garva. He says, Ma, please do not worry. Veda Garva. Garva means Brahmaji. Ghat Pandri. He says, Ma Veda. He says, don't worry about any knowledge. He says, don't become morose, do not become depressed. He addresses Brahmaji as, oh, depths of Vedic wisdom. Be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of your duties. See how kind Krishna is and how kind the spiritual master is. If we sincerely beg the way Brahmaji begged for instructions and to give us the strength to do and carry out the instructions of the spiritual master, then that begging will be perfect anxiety. In that mood of perfect anxiety, automatically Krishna and the spiritual master will reciprocate.
And he says very nicely, Tanmaya, Tanmaya Palitam, he, Ashre. He says, you have taken shelter of me. You do not have to worry. Ya maam prasayate bhava. Whatever that you have been begging of me before has already been granted to you before. Whatever that you have begged all this time, all these 1,000 years, you please know one thing. I have already granted it to you. I have already granted it to you. This is the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of his perfect representative. If we take up the spiritual service with the begging mood, the result is whatever that is in our heart that needs to be guided will automatically be granted by the spiritual master. I think the devotees have experienced this wonderful feeling that when we really sincerely beg, even though we are totally unqualified, the spiritual master is so kind that he just carves out some service for us so that we can do something and just somehow or another continue with our devotional service, even though we are not really qualified to do so. This is mercy of Krishna, this is mercy of the spiritual master. And this is the way to beg. Even the physical act of begging, Prabhupada writes in many of his purports, is very important for us. Prabhupada in Lecture of Devotion said, Krishna is the standard beggar. How did he beg? When Krishna wanted prasadam, he told the Gopas, go and beg from the brahmanas, but you won't get anything. And then go and beg from the wife of the brahmanas, and you will get everything. And Prabhupada writes there in Krishna book that this begging of Krishna is very indicative of one point, and that is that to beg, we must become humble. One cannot beg until one is humble. Srinarapi sunichena, sarorapi sahishuna, amamina manudena, kirtaniya sadahari. And to beg means we must have these four qualities that Mahaprabhu taught us in Sikshashtaka. We must learn to become more tolerant. We must learn to become more humbler than a blade of grass. We must lose all sense of false prestige. And we must be ready to offer respect to everyone. If we have that mood, then only the acharyas tell us we can properly learn to beg. Otherwise, just putting out hand like that is not begging. Just show bottle, oh Gurudev, I am the most fallen, but in the heart, really not. But I need your mercy. Without your mercy, I will be nothing. We must feel for what we say. Really feel for what we say. The acharyas like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, when he approached Mahaprabhu, how did he approach Mahaprabhu? They put a straw in between their mouth and with clenched teeth on the straw, they offered dandavat like a rod, straight down. And in that dandavat, they had all humility and they begged Mahaprabhu for mercy of the devotional service. When Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur went from door to door, they did not beg for alms. They just fell at the lotus feet of all, because for them, all Vaishnavas and all living entities were lotus feet, because Krishna was residing with them. And with that mood, they, devoid of all sense of false prestige, offering all respect to all, becoming more tolerant than a tree and more humble than a blade of grass, despite whatever scoldings and insults, Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur showed us how to beg. They would fall at the feet of these householders and they would beg them, please chant the holy name of Krishna even once. How much insult we would have got. But Prabhupada writes that begging induces pridelessness. And begging without pride, begging with full humility, begging not expecting, oh if I beg definitely he will give. That is not begging. That is exchange. Oh, if I show him that I am going to beg, he would must give. That is not real begging. Begging genuinely means I am helpless. I don't have this. Therefore I am asking you for this. I do not have this bhakti. Only you can give it. Please, only you can give it to me. That is genuine helplessness. Raghunath Das Goswami was the emblem of renunciation, we remember. He was born into a rich family, Prabhus and Madhuri. You remember, I think his uncles, his fathers, they were all very rich. But from the start, he only wanted to beg for mercy at the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. He wanted to beg mercy from all the associates of Mahaprabhu and beg to remain in their service. But Mahaprabhu's first instruction was stay in family life and don't worry. did Ramana Das Goswami just say, no, my motive is correct. The Lord knows my heart. I will disregard and disobey the orders of the Lord and just run away. He did not do that. Unlike Echalavya, he was not there for a show-bottle Guru Bhakti. Whatever Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said became life and soul. Patiently he waited for the day when the Lord would arrange for him to come. And all that time he was perfectly anxious in his heart, always finding ways and means when he can take darshan of Mahaprabhu. And finally the day came when Mahaprabhu presented it to him. Yadunandan Acharya, if you remember, was his spiritual master. And of course, you know, his father and mother gave strict instructions to everyone, make sure Ramana Das Goswami does not leave your eyes. If he goes anywhere and he's so attracted to Mahaprabhu, he will just run away. And that night, at the date of the night, when all the servants were sleeping, Yadunandan Acharya came in. He asked his disciple, Ramana Das Goswami, and he told Ramana Das Goswami, you know, I'm trying to find another disciple. He has run away, and we don't know where he is. He's supposed to come and do service for the deity. And Ramana Das Goswami said, I volunteer to go and find him. So what happened? He left the house in the date of the night, and throughout 30-40 days of difficulty, he just proceeded to see Mahaprabhu. And before that, what did he do? Before going to see Mahaprabhu, he begged for the mercy, of Nityananda Prabhu. That most powerful Panihati festival and that wonderful Leela, we all know. We know that it was Raghunath Das Goswami who supplied that wonderful feast. But he did not do that very proud, in a proud manner. He fell at the lotus feet of Nityananda Prabhu when Nityananda Prabhu was very far away. And when Nityananda Prabhu asked him to come here, he said, today you are very naughty. I am very displeased with you. Now the only punishment I must give you is I must put my lotus feet on your head. What a glorious punishment. And from that, let's do some Nityananda Prabhu. Why? Because the mood of Raghunath Das Goswami was begging for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Begging for the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. And because he was able to do that, he gained that humble and that wonderful attitude that allowed him finally, through the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, Adi Guru, to finally take darshan of Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. See the procedure that a devotee goes through. Never straight, but always with anxiety, in a state of helplessness and begging, because he genuinely feels he is not qualified. That is the real mood of a devotee. It is very difficult to follow these great acharyas, but we can only genuinely beg Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami to give us somehow a fraction of power to follow the orders of a genuine spiritual master. At least that should be the starting point of our devotional service. And Ramana Das Goswami became the emblem of renunciation because despite having so much money at disposal, he always used to beg at the gates of Simhadwara of Jagannath. And when Mahaprabhu heard what has happened to Ramana Das Goswami, he is no more sitting down having prasadam with us. Swarup Damodar, who was his mentor and his guru, very nicely told Mahaprabhu that he is no more taking prasadam just like that. He wants to beg. Why did Raghunath Das Goswami do that? Because he wanted to induce the spirit of humility that he was helpless, that he had to depend on the mercy of Jagannath for whatever prasad came. And then after a while, he was not even begging at the gates of Simhadwara. He was just going to this free distribution outlet where if something was there, it would be there. If nothing was there, he would just have to pass. And when Mahaprabhu heard that, Mahaprabhu said, very good. Begging at the gates of Simhadwara is like begging like a prostitute. Mahaprabhu was very heavy. He said, if you stand at the gate of Simhadwara, all the other devotees will know you are a devotee. Then out of love and sympathy, they must give you some prasad. That is not real begging, Mahaprabhu said. Real begging is when you know that you may not get anything. And that is an important point in devotional service. We should not approach a spiritual master with the motive that if I beg from you, you must give me now. That is not begging anymore. Maharaj, I am begging from you, you have to give me now. Then who is Maharaj and who is disciple, we also don't know. So this point is very important. Begging doesn't mean automatically there is a right of entry to the kingdom of God. Begging still means that I am helpless. You can do with me as you please. This is the mood of Parikshit Maharaj. I am begging you. Because I am going to die. Parikshit Maharaj was so exalted, but he was waiting. This is mood of devotee. And finally when Raghunath Das Goswami decided he was not going to beg from that outlet also, what did he do? All the prasad that was already 2-3 days old from the Simhadwara side, they would just take all that prasad and they would put it out for the cows. The taste of the prasad was terrible. The smell of it, even the cows won't take it. It was decomposed to the point Bhagavatam and Charita Sarvatita say that you cannot even eat it. What would Raghunatha Goswami do? He would take all of them, clean them, bring them home, apply a little bit of salt with them, and then he would take this prasad. When Swarup Damodar heard about it, Swarup Damodar went there and he begged Raghunatha Goswami to give me some prasad. He begged. And of course Raghunatha Goswami felt that I am not in a position to give you this kind of prasad. When Mahaprabhu heard that, Mahaprabhu took it one step further. He went to see Raghunatha Goswami. And when he saw him, Raghunatha Goswami was totally unprepared. Mahaprabhu said, "What is this? You are taking prasad without even giving me. This is very bad. How? What? You have breached all etiquette." Raghunatha Goswami was floundering, you know. He could not even know what to say. He wanted to say, "Lord, this prasad is not meant for you." But before he could say anything, Mahaprabhu took the prasad from his hand and immediately took it and said, "This is a perfection of my existence. That I have eaten such wonderful tasting prasad." So what does this show us? It shows us that if we are genuine beggars in this path of devotional service, Mahaprabhu himself and his perfect representative themselves will reciprocate very nicely and give us some section of their mercy. That is definite. It will not elude us. But the point is, we must become perfectly anxious. And how to become perfectly anxious? To take up the devotional process is to become perfectly anxious. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If we are really helpless in that mood, really sincere in our devotional service, then we can really beg. Otherwise, don't be surprised if after begging and begging, we find nothing is happening. That only comes back to us, that really I am begging because I am not really helpless. I am not really genuinely begging. And begging means with no expectation. A beggar doesn't think that the moment he begs, he's going to get money. Some days you tell him, some days are off days, some days are on days. You know, some days I get everything, some days I get nothing. That is the nature of begging. So Vaishnava must be prepared that if he begs, he may not get. But he continues to beg. Because where else can he go but be at the lotus feet of another Vaishnava? Where else, Prabhu and Mataji, can we go today except to Krishna, to the devotee and to our spiritual master? Where else can you go? You can't go anywhere. Anywhere else and you'll be tried in this material world. So this is really the state of our begging. We are really losers. From the start we should remember that we are really bankrupt. We have nothing with us, yet we think we have everything. If we really genuinely believe we have nothing, then whatever that is here becomes everything to us. This is very important. So the conclusion of this verse is that when we become really, really helpless, like Sudama, Prabhupada uses Sudama to make us understand begging. He says Sudama had nothing in his possession. So he and his wife had to beg from a neighbor to get some rice for Krishna. They had nothing. Plate was clean for all the wrong reasons. Nothing was there. So when Sudama gave Krishna something that he had begged, Krishna was at a loss. Why? Because Krishna couldn't find something that he could not have to give Sudama. He could have easily given Sudama anything if Sudama had not begged for something that he could not get to give Krishna. But because he begged and he was helpless, Krishna was put in a helpless position. He got caught. And his state of feeling and mind, very nicely was explained, is that now I have been put in a position where I am the owner of everything in this world. Sudama gave me something that he could not own. I can only give him something which I own. So who is greater? Sudama is actually greater than me. But unfortunately for me, you know, the way I am is that I created everything in this world. I can't go somewhere out and find something that I don't have. So this helpless mood of Sudama completely bound the Lord. And because the Lord was bound, not because he was begging for rice, but he was bound because he was begging for association of Krishna. He was begging just to take darshan of Krishna. And because he only had bhakti in his heart, Krishna can give anything to you with abandon. But the moment bhakti comes into the picture, Krishna finds it little bit difficult. Because he knows the moment he gives bhakti, then purvanti mam bhaktya, he becomes bound. And once he is bound, Krishna is the devotee to keep, to serve, and to always beg from. So this is the mood of helplessness that we should have. Never approach devotional service thinking that we must become successful. Approach devotional service and the spiritual master to beg him to show us the right way to live. If we have that mood only, then if something comes, well and good. If it doesn't come, we still have to continue begging to the spiritual master. This should be the mood of the devotee. And I want to share with you this very nice bhajan that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given. I think it is in one of his great writings. It's a very, very beautiful bhajan, because in just this one bhajan, if we read these five lines together, we'll find that all that has been said about begging and how to approach the Vaishnava is very wonderfully stated here. Pushpa Gopa Prabhu always has stated in his lectures that we don't have to concoct anything in prayer, because everything is given by the Vaishnava. And frankly speaking, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has, in this entire devotional song, he has given the entire purport to this. So you can kindly ignore everything that I have said, because it really has no value. But please don't ignore this song, because this wonderful Acharya has told us how to beg for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. We beg for the devotee's mercy. Just read, let us read this verse together. We read the translation together. When will Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu show his causeless mercy to me by allowing me to attain the shade of the lotus feet of his Vaishnava devotee? This is the mood of a devotee. You can see that this is the begging mood that a devotee has. He is not asking for dharma, artha, kama and moksha. He is only asking to be in the shade of the lotus feet of Vaishnava. That is what Parikshit Maharaj wanted from Shukadeva Goswami. Nothing else. Second verse, let us read. When will I be able to give up this false ego, which is so deeply engrossed in sense gratification? And when will I be able to properly honor the associates of the Lord? These are the two questions that the devotees should ask when we approach the Guru. Because these are the questions that will help us to go through the entire mode of our material life. Third question. Now see the procedure. Now he's giving procedure. Very nice procedure. I will stand before Vaishnava with folded hands, a cloth binding my neck and a straw between my teeth, sincerely awaiting his order. This is what we should do first. Second, weeping and weeping, I will inform him of my host of material miseries, and I will beg for relief from the blazing fire of this material world. This is what Parikshit Maharaj was going to ask before he was going to die. That he knew this world was full of misery, and he is begging to Vaishnava how to come out of this misery. Next one. Hearing about all my misery suffering, the Vaishnava Thakura will submit an appeal to Lord Krishna on my behalf. After procedure, this is action now. So the Vaishnava is so kind that when he hears the miserable suffering, what will he do? He will submit this appeal. And once he submits, what happens next? By the prayer of the Vaishnava, the all-merciful Lord Krishna will then become compassionate towards such a sinner as me. This is what happens when Guru's mercy descends on us. And finally, this wonderful mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda prays unto the lotus feet of the Vaishnava, please be merciful and take this worthless person into your association. This entire song is about begging. It is implicit in the words, it is implicit in the behavior. So what can we learn from Bhaktivinoda Thakur? That if really, really all else fails, then please do paragraphs 3, 4 and paragraph 5, 6, 7 will come. That is the moment in which we must approach Guru. It's a very difficult thing to do, to stand before the spiritual master and genuinely cry and ask that the spiritual master gives his mercy. Very difficult. But it must come from the heart. All the talk in the world, all the sayings in the world, all the shlokas that we learn will have no value until we can really learn to beg our spiritual master for mercy. Beg Krishna for a semblance of sadhana. Shall we try singing this wonderful verse and try and remember Krishna, and we end by trying to beg the mercy of the Vaishnavas so that we will always somehow or another be engaged in this process of being master. Now, the verse is a bit tricky to sing.